Okay, good afternoon from the north of England. It's Sunday afternoon, 15 minutes to 1 o'clock. I've been looking on BitChute and I found a video that I need to share. It's one of those days where I'm probably going to be sharing quite a few videos again. So this is a compilation. It's an edited down version of some interviews with Richard Fleming, who's a medical researcher and a doctor, got a long track record. Part of what's been edited down is a presentation he did called Event 2021 that he did in Texas that was live streamed by the Highwire. So it's on the Highwire site and it's on flemingmethod.com. So this is the edited version. So it's some interviews and some bits of Event 2021. Edit it down to about half an hour. The full live stream is 4.5 hours long. And I suggest you go and watch at least the first hour and a quarter of it. And then see how you feel about it. It's very science heavy, but it's if you can plow through it, it's gonna be worth your while. It's gonna be worth your while because he's the source of or he's the source of the science for a lot of things that people have been saying that I didn't believe. I was cautious about claims of mad cow disease. I've been cautious about claims that there's HIV in the spike protein that's in SARS-CoV-2. I was cautious about all of these things, but he's the man that's got the science. I haven't found anybody else. Really, I mean, Sherry Tenpenny might be doing it, but I haven't looked. But this is Dr. Richard Fleming. If you're going to talk about things like this, if you're going to talk about mad cow disease and prions and what have you, then you've got to have some science to back it up. I can't talk about those things unless I can direct people to a place that's got the science to back it up. So now that I've got the science, I can start thinking about how I want to express those things and how to get that across to people in a way that's not going to frighten them. So this is anyway, I'll just play the video because he said there's it's mostly Richard Fleming. There's one or two other people at the beginning. But here we go. This is on BitChute and the title of it is Spiked. Do vaccines elicit toxic, dangerous spike proteins? Compilation of experts speaking out. Okay, so you'll be able to go and find the original video. I pointed you to the website with the live stream on it. I don't know what else I can do, really. It's up to you to do the research.
You help them figure out the impact of just the spikes alone, and they realize the spikes don't just unlock cells. They also damage them.
One way to think about it is that this virus is just coated in kryptonite.
It eventually leads to damage in the cell's power source called mitochondria.
Dr. Kirsten Lake led a phase one trial for the COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech.
I mean, obviously, having no side effects is desirable, but I think with the spike protein of the coronavirus, it really does elicit some side effects.
In red here, the protein is the spike protein, 1,200 amino acids loaded, as is correctly pointed out by so many presenters, it is a deadly protein. By itself, it is a deadly protein. It's a deadly protein. It's the first time in human medicine where we are injecting vaccines and we're asking the human body to make a potentially lethal protein. We heard from one of the labs originally that the messenger RNA and the spike protein generation occurred only at the injection site. Turns out that's been false. So now spike protein has been found distributing in the body as well as the messenger RNA. So it distributes widely. The synthetic RNA products, Pfizer and Moderna, a recent paper from Harvard demonstrated in vaccinated individuals with the messenger RNA vaccines that there is a 2-week duration of circulating spike protein. Remember, the spike protein is the spiky structure on the ball of the virus. That's actually what causes damage to the human body. So this virus This vaccine causes the dangerous spike protein to be produced in an uncontrolled fashion in the human body. This is the first time ever we've ever attempted this in a human being. And we know the spike protein directly damages endothelial cells. It causes blood clotting, damages the brain, the lungs, the kidneys, the heart. It's directly responsible for the myocarditis and the other complications that we see. It directly goes to the placenta and the uterus in women who are pregnant or are childbearing. And then importantly, we believe it goes into breast milk and probably accounts for the baby who was killed after the baby breastfed from a woman 2 days after she was needlessly vaccinated. So we have a situation here where the messenger RNA vaccines are a brand new technology. They're now being used in patients never studied. So COVID recovered, suspected COVID recovered, those with the antibodies, pregnant women, women at childbearing potential, those were excluded from the registrational trials because the FDA and the sponsors knew that it was dangerous. It knew these patients had no opportunity for benefit. And here it is unleashed on the population, and boy, are we seeing the consequences.
Indeed, if you inject the purified spike protein into the blood of research animals, they get all kinds of damage to the cardiovascular system. It can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause damage to the brain. Now, at first glance, that doesn't seem too concerning because we're injecting these vaccines into the shoulder muscle. The assumption, all up until now, has been that these vaccines behave like all of our traditional vaccines, that they don't go anywhere other than the injection site. So they stay in our shoulder. Some of the protein will go to the local draining lymph node in order to activate the immune system. However, this is where the cutting edge science has come in. This is where it gets scary. Through a request for information from the Japanese regulatory agency, myself and several international collaborators have been able to get access to what's called a biodistribution study. It's the first time ever that scientists have been privy to seeing where these messenger RNA vaccines go after vaccination. In other words, is it a safe assumption that it stays in the shoulder muscle? The short answer is absolutely not. It's very disconcerting. The spike protein gets into the blood, circulates through the blood in individuals over several days post-vaccination. It accumulates, once it gets to the blood, it accumulates in a number of tissues such as the spleen, the bone marrow, the liver, the adrenal glands. One that's of particular concern for me is it accumulates at quite high concentrations in the ovaries. And then also a publication that was just accepted for a scientific paper just accepted for publication that backs this up looked at 13 young healthcare workers that had received the Moderna vaccine, right, which is the other messenger RNA-based vaccine we have in Canada. And they confirmed this. They found the spike protein in circulation, so in the blood of 11 of those 13 healthcare workers that had received the vaccine. What this means is, so we have known for a long time that the spike protein is a pathogenic protein. It is a toxin. It can cause damage in our body if it gets into circulation. Now we have clear-cut evidence that the vaccines that make our bodies, or the muscles, or the cells in our deltoid muscles, right, manufacture this protein. That the vaccine itself plus the protein gets into blood circulation. When in circulation, the spike protein can bind to the receptors that are on our platelets and the cells that line our blood vessels. When that happens, it can do one of two things. It can either cause platelets to clump, and that can lead to clotting. That's exactly why we've been seeing clotting disorders associated with these vaccines. It can also lead to bleeding. And of course, the heart's involved. It's part, a key part of the cardiovascular system. That's why we're seeing heart problems. The protein, it can also cross the blood-brain barrier and cause neurological damage. That's why also in the fatal cases of blood clots, many times it's seen in the brain. And also of concern is there's also evidence of a study. This has not yet been accepted for publication yet, this one. They were trying to show that the antibodies from the vaccine get transferred through breast milk. And the idea was this may be a good thing because it would confer some passive protection to babies. However, what they found inadvertently was that the vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines, actually get transferred through the breast milk. It was delivering the vaccine vector itself into infants that are breastfeeding. Also, what this now we know, the spike protein gets into circulation. Any proteins in the blood will get concentrated in breast milk. Looking into the adverse event database in the United States, we have found evidence of suckling infants experiencing bleeding disorders in the gastrointestinal tract. So,
okay, let me
me pause you there because I've only got about 45 seconds left. I mean, the bottom line, this
sure.
is scary.
I'll wrap it up.
This
is
a lot
very important,
out.
This
yeah.
message. Yeah, so this has implications for blood donation. Right now, Canadian Blood Services is saying people that who have been vaccinated can donate. We don't want transfer of these pathogenic spike proteins to fragile patients who are being transfused with that blood. This has implications for infants that are suckling. And this has serious implications for people for whom SARS coronavirus 2 is not a high-risk pathogen, and that includes all of our children. In short, the conclusion is we made a big mistake. We didn't realize it until now. We thought the spike protein was a great target antigen. We never knew the spike protein itself was a toxin and was a pathogenic protein. So by vaccinating people, we are inadvertently inoculating them with a toxin. Some people, this gets into circulation, and when that happens in some people, it can cause damage, especially the cardiovascular system. And I have many other, I don't have time, but many other legitimate questions about the long-term safety, therefore, of this vaccine. For example, with it accumulating in the ovaries, one of my questions is, will we be rendering young people infertile, some of them infertile?
And if you look at the data for the last 2 to 3 decades, there's something called self-amplifying mRNAs, which is how they do that. They take the target, in this case, the spike protein genetic information, and they take the earlier part of the genetic sequence that codes for what's called replicase, or repeating enzyme, and those go together in the actual vaccines to get it to replicate more and more the spike protein. So you've got We put the things, the genetic code together piece by piece. They know what the spike protein code is. That's how we know there's PRRA inserts in there that don't exist in any other coronavirus. That's how we know there's HIV glycoprotein 120 in it that's not in any other coronavirus. And that's how we know that the change of the structure in the molecular spike protein produced a regional, a prion-like domain near the top of it where it attaches to the ACE receptor called the regional binding domain. On the very bottom, you see the outer envelope of the virus, and then the tree-like structure is what the molecule that we call the spike protein, which really has two parts, an S1 and an S2, is at. And if you see where it bends, when you look at this virus in real time, this virus actually bends at that joint. It bends and hunts and moves around to find the ACE receptor. Now, number one is identified as HIV pseudovirus glycoprotein 120, which Shi Zhang Li has admitted to inserting into this spike protein to increase the infectivity. Her documented papers are on that website.
Now, let's talk about that for a second. I want to stay, let's stay focused here. Because I remember very early on, and maybe they don't connect, there was some Indian scientists that said, of this spike protein, we have found an HIV insert. They, like, disappeared. That paper was shut down. That whole story was so incredibly whitewashed immediately. Is that, were they on to something? Were they correct? Is this what they were talking about?
Yeah, I think this is probably the exact same thing because it's like, I mean, this is what Shi Zhang Li said she did. They modified it with the express purpose of making it more infective, and it does because that glycoprotein 120 is critical. The reason why that's critical is because it is related to the PRRA insert. And those two things together allow this virus to increase its ability to infect by somewhere between 4 to 20 times. And the second part is what's called a PRRA insert. And every amino acid has a letter of the alphabet assigned to it. It's one of the shortcut codes that scientists have when they're talking about amino acids. So P is for proline, R is for arginine, and A is for alanine. And so it's a PRRA insert. And the important thing here is that every one of those amino acids requires 3 nucleotide bases to make. Mutations occur 1 nucleotide at a time. So those 4 amino acids mean 12 nucleotides were inserted. They didn't mutate 12 at a time. Mutations don't happen like that. 1 makes a major change. This is 12 inserted in. And if you look at every other coronavirus on the planet, No other coronavirus has this. Rabies toxin does, and rabies toxin is also related to the PRRA insert, just like glycoprotein 120. Well, the reality is that this is a molecule, and so, you know, it's like a box. If you put pressure on a box, it changes the shape of a box or a bag or a balloon. Well, this is a molecule, and if you put pressure on it by doing something to it, it changes its shape. Well, there's been two pressure points. One is the HIV glycoprotein 120 insert. The other one is the PRRA 4 amino acid insert, which is 12 nucleotides, as we talked about. Yep. And that has caused a conformation or shape change of this molecule. And it's occurred right at the top of it. We're number three, and that's a prion-like domain. And what that means is that that area has the potential to cause prion diseases because prions are abnormally folded proteins. Okay. And I wish I could tell you that that was just a potential risk, but there's been two major animal models that have been done, not by the vaccine companies, mind you, but by other researchers, and they're published on the site. One is on what's called humanized mice, so mice that have been modified to have an ACE receptor so we can use them as a study model. And they were exposed to this virus with its spike protein. 95% of those mice died within 2 weeks. When the autopsies were done and the brains were looked at, the brains looked like sponges. They had these open spaces. And so in medicine and science, we call that spongiform encephalopathy because it's the brain. The brain looks like a sponge. What that produces is what is generally known as mad cow disease. So every one of these mice developed mad cow disease. They've done this in another animal model, rhesus macaques, which are a very close primate to us. So if you want to know what's going to happen to humans, this is a good way to do it. You expose these monkeys to the drug or the virus or whatever you're testing, and you look to see what the response is. And they sacrificed these animals at 5 to 6 weeks, and they did biopsies of their brain. And in their brain, they found inflammation, glial cells and other types of inflammatory cells, and they found something called Lewy bodies in the brains of these animals, where Lewy bodies is a prion disease that produces Alzheimer's. So we have two animal models, two very different but good animal models, that have shown that when the animal's brains are exposed to this spike protein, which, by the way, we know is exquisitely designed to cross the blood-brain barrier, your final frontier protection of your brain, is easily crossed by these, not only these spike proteins, but the lipid nanoparticles that are used for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine are very susceptible to being crossed by these lipid nanoparticles. So we've seen in two different animal models prion diseases that are mad cow disease or Alzheimer's that we're yet on the beginning of this. For example, the animal model at 2 weeks for the mice represents 1.5 years for humans.
Okay. Okay. And so when we talk about a prion, this is something that causes your cells to fold on each other or...
Right. It causes proteins to abnormally fold. So if you have a normal appearing protein, it functions. But abnormally folded proteins can't work, and they just curl up and they become dysfunctional and damaging, and then they touch other proteins. And what a real prion disease does is when that abnormally folded protein comes into contact with normal proteins, it can cause them to abnormally fold, and you get this slowly progressive disease like Alzheimer's and mad cow's disease.
Really, the spike protein could be considered the bioweapon separately apart from the coronavirus it's riding on. I mean, is that clear that really we could look at the coronavirus as a floating delivery system for this weaponized bioweapon? Is that
That's an excellent way of looking at it.
Okay.
Yes.
And so now we've made vaccines where normally we've done a lot of our investigation in vaccines, you will find that we go for the weaker part of the virus. Like if you think of like there's a tank with a nuclear weapon on top of it, we try to just take out the tracks. We like create antibodies to the tracks, let's knock out the wheels so that the virus cannot spread throughout your body. But if there's an accident, we put the weakest part to develop antibodies around. What is so weird about this vaccine, I don't know if it were, if we couldn't call it a vaccine, but instead of going after the weakest part of it, we seem to have taken the nuclear missile sitting on top and said, let's inject that into everybody, the actual bioweapon. Am I missing something? Tell me about how these vaccines are made.
No, you've got it exactly right. In fact, one of the things that people need to know is that just because you can make antibodies doesn't mean that's a good thing. We treat you for strep throat with antibiotics, partially to kill the bacteria, but partially because the antibodies to strep throat, Streptococcus pneumoniae, will also attack your heart because it looks similar enough, and we don't want you developing rheumatic heart disease. So cardiologists like myself and internists and other doctors give you antibiotics so you don't develop antibodies. For the spike protein, we have seen a brand new phenomenon with this spike protein we've never seen before. There's something called antibody-dependent enhancement. And in the past, it's meant different things. But for this spike protein, it means something completely different. The spike protein, I think I told you there were two parts, S1 and S2, that come together. On part of the spike protein, there's something called the N-terminal domain. And we know from people that were hospitalized with COVID that many of those people who did not do well had antibodies to the spike protein. But part of those antibodies were to the N-terminal domain. Now, there was a paper, and it's on the site, published by researchers from Osaka, Japan, who showed that when antibodies were made to the N-terminal domain of this spike protein, it actually opened up like a flower, this spike protein, so it was even more infective. And one of the reasons why people did not do well in hospital was because they made antibodies to the N-terminal domain. Well, that N-terminal domain is still in this vaccine. These vaccines are either the mRNA, the genetic code that you find in the virus, like Pfizer and Moderna, or a double-stranded DNA put inside of another virus, the adenovirus, for the Janssen or Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and it carries billions of coded messages to make spike proteins. So people are being inundated with this spike protein. The people that did poorly up front with the infection were all the people that had comorbidities, all the people that I talked about in 94 and 95 and 99 and all that time when I presented those programs and published in the textbook, the cardiology textbook. All of those people do poorly because their body is already geared up. They have inflammation and blood clotting already going on.
Right.
So for them, you drop this little match on it, and that was enough to kill them because nobody was treating the inflammation and the blood clotting. Now we have people getting billions of this by these vaccines, and people that are healthy are doing what healthy people should do. They're going, wow, this is a massive antigen load, and I need to make antibodies to it and make T-cell responses, and they are having reactions.
When people are getting these injections, they are literally injecting billions of these bioweapons into themselves. The same bioweapon that causes blood clotting goes into the brain, can have this prion disease. So they're not just spotting off a few hundred thousand, 10,000, 100,000, even a million. Their body is trying to deal with billions of spike proteins that have a prion sitting on the top of it.
Absolutely. To require that our healthy college students get vaccinated, or our 12 to 18 year old kids get vaccinated, or as Fauci says, he wants to take it down to 2 years to get vaccinated for something that they should not be vaccinated for. When you understand this is a gain of function spike protein virus, you are injecting a bioweapon into the arms of our children and the people we love. Stop the nonsense, stop the gain of function. And every one of these people should be held accountable in international court in a Nuremberg trial for crimes against humanity. Because when you make these bioweapons, like you just read the definition, that is a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty that this country signed and ratified. And the next slide shows, I just made that comment about, we now know that SARS-CoV-2, whether it be from the virus or from the vaccines, reverse transcribes or gets into our human DNA. So transcription is DNA to RNA, and reverse transcription is RNA to DNA. We now know, here's the studies down here, you know me well enough by now to know that I'm going to give you the resource and the papers to go read if you're so inclined, or for your doctor or researchers, that this virus, whether it be the virus itself or the vaccines, inserts itself into all but three of our 23 sets of chromosomes. Chromosome 8, 15, and 20 still seem to be protected or not transcribed. But we now know that giving this to people will get it into our human DNA. So all those questions about does it or doesn't it, it does.
You're an expert on inflammation, and as you're describing it, the inflammatory effects of the spike protein are not only limited to vascular damage, which could be blood clots, it could be heart attacks, or perhaps strokes and so on, but I believe from what you're saying, the inflammatory effects can also be neurological or autoimmune in nature. Would that be a correct assessment?
Yes, absolutely. There's some good studies that we have on the website, FlemingMethod.com, that actually shows animal research. So humanized mice and rhesus macaque models are the two best ones that we have information on, showing that these spike proteins, and it doesn't matter whether they come in from the virus or whether they're made by a vaccine, which is the genetic sequence of the bioweapon. So they just simply put that inside of a drug vaccine biologic and then injected that into people. And it's just astonishing that they don't have any remorse for doing this. This spike protein is well known to cross the blood-brain barrier. It causes the brain to look like a sponge or a spongiform encephalopathy, which is frequently called mad cow disease. It causes Alzheimer's disease with what's called Lewy body formation, these prions in the brain. It causes damage to the heart because it's inflammation and blood clotting is occurring all over the body. It's not going to be consistent that everybody's going to have the same bad outcome, and it's going to slowly but surely take place over time. And I remember raising the question back in March that there was no way in the world that these vaccines, these drug biologics that they were coming out with, could have the immune response they were doing unless there was something else beside the genetic code for the spike protein. And it looks like there is. They're actually called self-amplifying mRNAs, which means it also carries the genetic code to make more and more and more of the spike protein. Well, guess which animal model has been used or the self-amplifying mRNA for SARS-CoV-2. Most animal models are dog, cat, mouse, rat. Guess what animal model they were using for this research?
You tell me.
Human. Human.
Well, but what you just said now has me even more concerned, because you just said the self, essentially self-replicating vaccine technology or self-assembling mRNA, which means that, see, we were told by the establishment that the mRNA is injected into you at a certain mass, a certain number of micrograms of mRNA, and that it then churns out, you know, a certain number of spike protein particles, and then it's done, and that's it. Like, it runs out. But from what you're saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that then these instructions can themselves self-replicate, which means this may be an ongoing transformation of people's bodies into spike protein factories. Am I hearing you correctly?
Right. So for a variety of reasons, that's right. First off, there's now two published papers that show that the genetic sequence of SARS-CoV-2, even if it's just for the spike protein, can get into your DNA. That's called reverse transcription. And that's something that we've known about in science since HIV. HIV, which Dr. Fauci was very much in the scene at the time. I was in medical school when it came out, so I've always kind of looked at that and said, well, I can't find any good papers that Dr. Fauci has really published on HIV since the early 80s when I was in medical college. So we know it gets back into your DNA. We know it gets into all but three of the human chromosomes. We know that it keeps replicating itself. We know that the injections don't stay at the site of injection, and we have known that since 2017. This is not brand new to the world. Moderna had a lipid nanoparticle influenza vaccine that they did studies on in the animals, and when they injected in the animals, that spread to the brain, the heart, the liver, the spleen, the bone marrow, all throughout the animal. So to pretend that they thought that this was going to stay right where it was just, they're lying.
Even, of course, they're lying. You're absolutely right. Even the EU, I think, has just put new warnings on one of the COVID vaccines about kidney damage. Well, how is the spike protein getting to the kidneys if it stays in the injection site? How is it damaging the ovaries and causing, in some cases, spontaneous abortions or infertility if it's staying in the injection site? Clearly, as you're saying, this is circulating throughout the body, and if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, getting to what you just said in the last segment, and I'm going to translate this crudely into layman's terms, it sounds like over time, the spike protein eats your brain, it eats your heart, it eats your vascular system. I know those aren't medical terms, but just crudely, that's what it sounds like is in store for these people, not only who have taken double shots now, but who are going to be talked into taking booster shots, a third booster, a fourth booster, a fifth, never ending, I guess, until you're dead. Maybe they'll try to inject you after you're dead because they can still bill Medicare for that. It's insane.
And so what they did was to take the genetic sequence that they had put together that made their bioweapon, and then they put that into a drug vaccine and inject it into people. Now, normally a person will get hundreds or thousands or maybe tens of thousands of virus from if somebody coughs and spreads it to you, and you'll respond to that. And if you had these comorbidities, all these other diseases, then and you didn't get treated for the inflammation of blood cough, the critical thing, then people die. But when you take these vaccines, the Pfizer Moderna mRNA lipid nanoparticles contain 13.1 billion of this. The AstraZeneca and Janssen, or Johnson & Johnson, have 50 billion. When you have healthy people, particularly our kids and our military, right? You know, healthy people, and you give them billions versus hundreds or thousands, you're going to get a bigger inflammation and blood clotting or inflammatory thrombotic response. And that's why we're seeing healthy people have all these consequences, because they're healthy people and they're responding to a massive attack and their immune system is trying to function. It just, you know, they've never seen things like that.
But I want to get back to something you said. You said the spike protein load that's in some of the vaccines, I believe you said the Johnson & Johnson or the Janssen in Europe, injects people with about 50 billion particles. Was that correct?
That's correct. That's
and
correct.
What? I mean, that doesn't sound like a small amount to me. That sounds like a massive load. What are the physiological effects of being hit with that kind of a load of a pro-inflammatory biological weapon?
We're supposed to do animal research before we do people research. In humanized mice, so that was mice that we gave ACE2 receptors to so we could work with them on this. After 2 weeks, 95% of the animals were dead. When we looked at those animals, we saw this under the microscope. This kind of looks like a sponge, right? This is what it's supposed to look like, all this. But this is what happens, and this looks like a sponge, and it's in the brain. So in medicine and science, we call that spongiform encephalopathy, okay? And the general public calls this mad cow disease. We also know in rhesus macaque monkeys, because those are the closest thing to us to use as a model to see what will happen to us, that in 5 to 6 weeks, when the animals were sacrificed, this part of their brain was infected with the spike protein. And when we looked at their brains, we saw inflammatory cells and we saw Lewy bodies. That's Alzheimer's disease and other neurologic diseases. These animals didn't have this before they were exposed. This is the result of the spike protein crossing the blood-brain barrier, which is exquisitely good at, and getting to its target. There's a doctor, a PhD by the name of Kevin W. McCarron in Japan, who's done more research. He is probably the world's expert on animal models, on primate models, and these diseases. And for a year, Dr. McCarron has been warning the world that this is going to have, that this spike protein crosses the blood-brain barrier and will have damaging neurologic effects like it did on the monkeys. He's done animal models showing what happens when you damage this part of the brain, and his animal models match exactly this type of damage with neurologic disease. There are scientists around the world trying to address this problem and bring home the information that you need.
Okay, that's the end of the video. It's an important thing. So Dr. Richard Fleming was the main speaker for the bulk of the end of that video, the last 20 minutes or so. Fleming Method is his website. The talk he did, Event 2021 in Dallas, was live streamed by the Highwire. So it's on the Highwire website. It's 4.5 hours long. If you can watch it and you can make notes, do it, honestly. I've watched the first hour and a half of it. I'm going to go back to it and watch the second section of it and then watch the final part at some point as well. But I'm doing it in hour and a half chunks because that's all my brain can absorb because it's very science heavy. But I recommend you do it and get used to the science and get used to the language and get used to how people talk about these things, because if you have to explain it to somebody, you have to know what you're talking about. And if you don't know what you're talking about, you're going to discredit what you're saying. So you have to know the language. You have to know where to look for the research. You have to know who to refer people to for the research information and for the science and for the medical information. Otherwise, it just discredits you and it discredits what you're saying. And I can't think of any other way to do it. I really can't, because that's what it takes for me. It takes somebody who knows the science and knows the medical information and can refer me to research papers. That's what it takes for me to be convinced. So I'm projecting out and assuming that everybody else needs that. Obviously, they don't. It might be 20% of people that need that, or 50% of people that need that kind of detail. But for me, that's necessary, because if I'm going to make an argument for a particular thing, I need to be able to back it up. Anyway, that's it for me. I've got more BitChute research to do. So there'll be another video at some point today. And then I've got Live from the Laundry Room this evening at 7 o'clock UK time. So I hope to see you for that. That's a call-in show. So if you want to call in, you're welcome. And we'll have a conversation about whatever you want to speak about is fine, within reason. We're not going to get into minute details of your sex life or whatever, but within reason, a general conversation. Keep it fairly light if you can, and ideally no swearing, no drugs. But if that's what you want to talk about, then that's what we'll talk about.